This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, September 10th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, Amy Guida has this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News, and we'll check your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, a look at today's news. A proposal to create a special governing board for the Champaign County Nursing Home will go before two county board committees tomorrow. The Justice and Policy Committees will hold a special joint meeting to consider the idea. AM 580's Jim Meadows reports.
Currently, the Champaign County Board oversees the financially troubled county nursing home. But backers of the governing board proposal say it would put oversight into the hands of experts in areas like health care and finance, who could better handle the nursing home's problems. DeKalb County's nursing home has its own operating board, which has been credited with fixing its financial problems. The DeKalb County administrator discussed the concept last week in meetings with Champaign County board members, including Justice Committee Chair Jan Anderson, who likes the idea.
So I think it's something that we need to look at. I think it might give them a closer oversight and also some expertise in sharing with the administrator some of the difficulties that nursing homes have in operating.
Champaign County Board Chairman Pius Weibel says he finds the idea of a nursing home governing board interesting, but still has a lot of questions. He doesn't think the county board has to decide on the issue right away. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
The three most powerful figures in state government began the year with three different goals, and they ended up with three failures. Governor Rod Blagojevich sought a huge health care expansion. Senate President Emil Jones vowed to overhaul education funding. And House Speaker Michael Madigan wanted to reduce the state's massive debt. But their hopes were dashed by the infighting and bizarre events of a legislative session that still hasn't ended. Former State Representative Larry McKeon calls it a lose-lose situation for everyone. He blames Blagojevich, saying the governor alienated legislators instead of seeking their help. But Blagojevich has consistently pointed to Madigan as the roadblock. He says the House Speaker worked with Republicans to stop programs for the poor and needy. The University of Illinois is starting the long process of keeping its certification with the NCAA. The athletic body inspects all of its member schools' programs to see how they stack up on academic integrity, governance and rules compliance, equity, and the well-being of their student-athletes. Renee Romano is the U of I's Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. She also heads the committee that will start the process by inspecting the athletic program itself.
And we send that to the NCAA, and then they send a team of people that represent them from other institutions, and they look at our study and compare it with what they find on campus to make sure that our study is what they is true.
That team arrives next fall. It's the second time the U of I will go through the examination process. The NCAA launched the program in 1993. Illinois has received NCAA scrutiny in the past for its use of the Chief Illiniwek symbol as well as individual violations. But Romano thinks those issues have been resolved, and the certification process will find only a few things that need improvement. For the first time in 80 years, the University of Illinois' halftime show was done without Chief Illiniwek. The students in Memorial Stadium's new North End student section did what they could Saturday to remind others of the symbol by chanting and folding their arms in the style of the chief during the band's performance of the 3-in-1. John Holmstrom, a sophomore from St. Charles, sported his chief t-shirt, saying he was disappointed with the way trustees handled the matter last spring.
I don't think it was disrespectful, and I don't know that a lot of Indian Americans find it offensive either. So I needed to support the chief, whether or not he's out on the field.
Students did keep their opinions confined to the stands. No one tried to fill the space formerly occupied by the chief during the halftime show or protest on the field. The capacity crowd at Memorial Stadium saw the Illini win their home opener over Western Illinois 21-0. More than 100 protesters gathered in downtown Chicago yesterday to call for a boycott of Macy's a year after taking the place of the iconic Marshall Field store. Chants of "Fields is Chicago, boycott Macy's," and signs reading "Macy's Go Home" filled the corner of State Street and Washington Avenue, where Marshall Fields once stood. Chicago resident Tom O'Brien says it was his third time protesting Fields' disappearance, and he, like other Chicagoans, are still holding out for its return. The 26-year-old Amanda Burton, who was shopping at Macy's on Sunday, says she found the protest frivolous. The Cincinnati-based company is struggling to boost sales at its department stores since acquiring the chain. The company says its second-quarter earnings were down 77% last month. An Indiana lawmaker proposed a tax relief plan Sunday that he says will cut local property taxes by $2.3 billion, largely by raising state sales and income taxes. Under State Representative David Orentleicher's plan, about $1.6 billion in property taxes would be shifted to state sales and income taxes, which would see increases of 1% each. Another $300 million would come from increased business taxes, and $400 million in local expenses would be transferred to the state, which would cover the costs with its surplus and money from casino licensing fees. Orentleicher, who's an Indianapolis Democrat, says he plans to solicit taxpayers' input on his plan and introduce it to fellow lawmakers in November. For the latest newscast online, go to our website at wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Last year's hit movie Borat has been hit with several lawsuits filed by people who, perhaps unwittingly, became a part of the movie. Now, as commentator Amy Guida explains in this week's Legal Issues in the News, at least one court has sided against Borat and in favor of privacy.
You probably don't know who Ellen Johnston is, but you may have seen her. She's from Mississippi, and she appeared in the hit movie Borat last year. Her appearance was both short-lived, she was on screen for only about 3 seconds, and also apparently most unwelcome. Johnson sued the movie production company and others connected with the film. Her lawsuit is based on the invasion of privacy torts. Courts and legislatures created those torts to protect what the law calls the right to be let alone. Here's some background before getting into the law. Borat, as the Johnston court put it, involves a fictional character who lives in Kazakhstan and who is asked by his government to travel to the United States to film a documentary about life here. Along the way, the fictional character Borat meets some members of a fraternity, a group of feminists, and some people at a Pentecostal camp meeting, among others. Most, the court says, have no idea that Borat is an actor. They believe that he's really filming a documentary. Johnston, the plaintiff here, was one of the people at the Pentecostal camp meeting. During that part of the film, again from the court's description, Borat appears to speak in tongues and experience a religious conversion. Johnston is pictured raising her arms in praise to God for Borat's conversion for about 3 seconds. But 3 seconds can pack a powerful privacy punch if you're not expecting exposure in a hit movie. Johnston convinced the court as much, and at this early stage in the litigation, the tables have turned on Borat. Privacy is really four different torts, all meant to make good the emotional harm we feel when our privacy is invaded. Intrusion is peering in on someone or someone's private matters. Publication of private facts is revealing a private fact about someone else's life to a group of people. False light is the publication of false information regarding someone else that may or may not harm that person's reputation. And finally, misappropriation is the use of someone's image or name without permission. The court found that the plaintiff here had successfully focused on the final two, false light and misappropriation. False light, the plaintiff argued, because her actions could be seen as mocking her religion, and therefore the movie placed her in a false light before the public because she'd never do that. Misappropriation because she claims the movie makers used her image without her permission, if just for 3 seconds. The court agreed with the plaintiff on both counts and ruled that the lawsuit could continue. So what's the significance of one little lawsuit like that? If the court is right, and many, many others who are pictured in the film for mere seconds or even longer didn't really know what was going on, and as long as the statute of limitations holds for them, the door has been open to similar lawsuits based on those same privacy claims. There's no guarantee that another court would rule the same way that this one did, but now there's definite precedence. The privacy door has been opened by a federal trial court. Borat may be witnessing a sequel to his cultural learnings of America, but these are making benefit not for the glorious nation of Kazakhstan, but for benefit for plaintiffs and their privacy. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. In the forecast for the region today, expect intervals of clouds and sunshine, the high around 80 degrees. Tonight, mostly cloudy, a chance of a passing shower or two, a low of 55, mostly sunny tomorrow, the high 75. Clear and cool tomorrow evening, the low around 50, and around in the mid-40s in rural areas. Sunny skies Wednesday with a high of 74 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, September 10th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wyll.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.